Welcome to another episode of Drivers, First Call's behind-the-scenes look at the golf industry, the trends, and the people driving them. We've got a great one for you today. John, I'm here with John Last at Sports and Leisure Research Group. And John, you know, we've talked a lot over recent years about this trend towards participatory fandom. And, you know, there's a compelling argument that puts this as the biggest trend in the sports industry that we've seen for a very long time. When you look at things like leagues building up star players rather than teams, when you look at that, you pair that with fantasy sports and broader legalized sports wagering, this really is a trend that we need to look at specifically in the golf industry. And I wanted to get your take on what you see in terms of participatory fandom and how it relates to golf as well as today's interview.
Thanks, David. You know, I know we've talked about it a lot and it's almost become table stakes in the industry today. I mean, there's this common thread that if a fan has a vested interest in the performance of individual players, that transcends the relationship that they have with a team or a franchise. It's a great way that all properties have been bringing in casual fans and also maintaining fan interest if in the event of something being not competitive. I can relate to that as a Tennessee Titans football fan. We could be losing, as was unfortunately a lot of the case late last year. But if I've got Derrick Henry on my fantasy team, you know, I'm still watching his every move because that has implications. And golf, having always been primarily an individual sport, it was kind of difficult in some ways for people beyond, you know, the proliferation of wagering to get involved in that. You know, getting behind professional golfers had traditionally been limited to sponsors or small syndicates of wealthy individuals who financially backed aspiring tour players. But our guest today, I'm really excited to have, he's developed a concept and translated it from elsewhere in the sports business to make that whole aspect of participatory fandom more accessible for the average golf fan and investor. So I'm pleased to welcome today Brian Dockstader, who is the founder and CEO of Commonwealth Sports. He's based out in Los Angeles, just down the way from you, David, and he's doing just that. So, Brian, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it, and happy to be here.
You know, I'll admit, when I first heard about what you were doing, I was so excited about it. And I was excited about it, not just from the golf standpoint, but for those who know me, they realize I'm also very passionate about thoroughbred horse racing. And I know that really the foundation of your company was that you, like a handful of other companies, have created these syndicates that allow people to, you know, for a pretty minimal investment, own a fractional share of racehorses. And that's a lot better and easier, obviously, than the investment involved in operating an independent stable. Perhaps you can start by sharing with our audience the origins of what you've been doing in thoroughbred racing and how and why you've adopted that to professional golf.
Yeah, sure. We started crowdfunding effectively racehorses about 18 months ago. The way we do equity crowdfunding, it actually just fit over horse racing really, really well. You know, very expensive assets, very complicated things to do, high barrier to entry. And so our model just lowers the entry point. We take on a lot of the complexities, and the customer gets to invest as little as $50 a share and come along for the ride. And so we've done, I think, about 15 racehorses now. We've done two crops a year ago, and now we just did our most recent. And fortunately, we've been blessed with quite a bit of success. We had the highest earning racehorse in the world in 2022, Country Grammar. He won the Dubai World Cup. He's taken us on just the ride of a lifetime. And then now we've got our budding superstar, Mage, who's qualified for the Kentucky Derby. He ran second in the Florida Derby recently. And on both of those horses and many others, we've got 500 plus investors from all walks of life putting in anywhere from $50 to $10,000. I call it choose your own adventure. You can invest however much or as little as you like. And from there, once you've invested, it all happens inside the app. You sign documents, you connect your credit card, bank account, whatever it is. And we do weekly updates, sometimes more often, race replays. In some cases, we have live racing all inside the app. So you're really taking your stable or your roster in the palm of your hands everywhere you go. So I've watched races from the golf course. I've watched it from the office. I've watched it live. So we're having a ton of fun and bringing a ton of people along with us.
So how does that translate into golf? I mean, now obviously you've expanded that model into the golf space. Tell me a little bit about how you've kind of adapted that concept.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite frankly, it's fairly similar. And I mean, if you look at golf, there's a number of lenses you could look at it through, but it's a high barrier to entry from all of those lenses, whether it's from the player's perspective, the costs and the rigmarole, so to speak, of breaking through Monday Qs and all these qualifying schools. And then on the other side of that, for the investor, you know, this happens a lot out in the wild already. A player will go to their parents' friends or their club or their money game, and they'll try to raise $100,000, but it'll be from 10 different people at $10,000 each. And so not only is there a lot of risk in that, of course, I mean, most of these golfers, you know, it's hard to make it as it should be. And so, you know, the thinking is, We can basically simplify this whole process. We can help identify players, bring it to people in a package that is easy to understand, standardized terms, and lower the entry point down. Right now, we've got it down to about $1,000 a person, but in the near future, it'll be just like racehorses, where you can invest in a player for $50 a share and go along with that journey. So, you know, a lot of the things you hear from developmental kind of budding golfers is, you know, they raise this money. If they can even raise the money, they raise it. And now they've got 10 to 20 people kind of barking down their necks about updates and where, you know, payments might be and how the money's being used. And so the thinking is, you know, we've already built the platform, and we can be a platform that sits in the middle. And so the investors communicate with us, we communicate with the player. It's our job to chase down any payments that might be being made. And then on top of that, some of the unique ways we're going about it, you know, the funds will be deposited into what I'm calling the operating account or the player fund account. And so we have direct visibility into how the money's being used, how much money is left. And it just, it's almost like there's a bit of a firewall, and there's a bit of a town sheriff sitting there saying, all right, you know, this is how this is going to unfold, compared to the Wild West, to continue on that metaphor. But, you know, a lot of the complaints you hear about investing in early stage golfers is just the chaos of it and not knowing what to expect on both sides of the table, really. So, you know, we think we can simplify a lot of that, standardize a lot of it. And we've got the technology built already to bring updates and bring the fun and really just bring the fans to a deeper level of connection to the player.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, the whole product supply side. In other words, you know, it's, you think about it from a thoroughbred world, you know, we don't have the equivalent of a Fasic Tipton auction and all the books on the horses. How do you identify the players and how do you kind of get them into the fold, particularly given that this is a concept that's relatively new to golf?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. There are no shortage of players, that's for sure. The quality bar would be the question. You know, how deep do you go, and you know, what kind of qualifications and exemptions and status do you think about? But I myself am a scratch player, lifelong competitive amateur, and so it's a game that I've been deeply involved in observing and playing. And then we have a player development manager out of Dallas who's very similar. Played high school and college golf and is just very well connected. And so really it's scouting every one of these mini tour events. We do tournament recaps every Monday where we talk about leaderboards, who's making moves. We look at Monday qualifiers. And then we all, you know, between myself and our player development manager, Tanner, we play with a lot of collegiate players and high level amateurs. So, you know, you'd be surprised how much you hear kind of inside the ropes about, you know, you'll hear, you know, somebody that's a former D1 player and a +5 handicap, and they'll be showering this other player with compliments that's coming up, and you go, oh, okay, maybe that's somebody we should keep our eyes on. And so from there, it's a combination of just starting to chat with them. Oftentimes they have agents, so no surprise, we're talking to a lot of golf agents, and the response there has been just overwhelmingly positive. I think that's partly due to the need for capital, but then also because I think our terms have been good. You know, we have things like repayment caps and buyout provisions and lots of things that are very player friendly that you wouldn't see in a kind of one-off deal happening out of a club. And so these first two players we've signed, it was a pretty good amount of conversations with both of their agents, in some cases their families, talking about the terms, and really just coming to an agreement on how we, you know, how we fund and help the player, you know, in their early stage career. So it's pretty quickly flipped from going out and hunting to now we're having agents call us. We're having collegiate players and coaches contact us asking what we're about. And again, I think that just speaks right back to the need. So I don't think, you know, medium to long term, I don't think finding the players will be the problem. I think it's finding the right players at the right moment and positioning them for success. So
how about on the demand side from the, you know, the investor's perspective, what's the economic model and how are you going about marketing this to potential investors? I know it's all housed within an app, but in terms of, you know, if our listeners would want to get involved from an investment standpoint, what are you doing to kind of attract them?
Yeah. So the basic economics of these first two deals and likely the successive deals are a period of years, the term. In this case, they're 6-year deals, and we're funding full seasons for 3 years. And our number is $75,000 a year. You know, you could probably get away with 50. That's a little bit light, and 100 is probably a little heavy. So we picked the midway point. And that was from a ton of research, talking to a lot of Korn Ferry players, a lot of XD1 that went the Canada Korn Ferry PGA Tour route. You know, they can sleep on a couch and they can get away with 50K, or they can sleep in a hotel and fly in airplanes and, you know, it's 80 to 100. So we picked 75K for 3 years. And those 3 years that we're fully carrying the expenses, we have a 30% income share. So all gross earnings from on course only. So we don't touch endorsements or any of that ancillary stuff that they make money through. We get 30% for 3 years. And then there's what I'm calling the residual period, because as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, exemptions are forward-based. And so as the player, ideally, in a positive scenario, earns exemptions going forward, we thought that we should have some sort of share in forward year earnings as well, but it tapers off. So it goes 30, 30, 30, 20, 15, 10% out in year six. And as I mentioned, there's buyout provisions, things like that. And so from there, as I mentioned before, in these offerings, it'll be possibly even closer. We're still tinkering with the minimums, but $1,000 to $2,000 minimums. And you'll get financial updates weekly, monthly or quarterly. We're sussing out exactly how often that an investor needs to hear that. And then we basically set up the schedule, which is usually known in advance. Like our first two signees are full status on PGA Tour Canada. So this spring, they've been doing Monday qualifiers on Korn Ferry. Starting in June, they'll have a full schedule in Canada. And we collect, you know, the player collects the purses. We send them a 30% invoice in this case, and it comes down and we distribute it right into a wallet inside of our app. And so the easiest way to find it is to either sign up on our website or download the app, and they're just sitting right inside there, and you can peruse. We show their resume, the schedule, bio, recent press, tons of stuff like that. So you can get a really good feel for the player.
Ryan, wrapping it up, let's look forward a little bit. How do you see that firms like yourself can better support players going forward? And how can they support, how do you think your firm will support the future of the game moving forward? And what other sports are you looking into?
Yeah, that's that last one's the big question on my mind usually. How we can support players, you know, I mean, this is just the beginning for us. We're planning to go to all levels, both men and women, all regions of the world. And I think, you know, the financial component is, it's certainly the biggest, and it's the one that creates the most constraints for the player. But I think, you know, we're going to start to build out a national and international network of coaches, physios, mental, you know, like the Bob Rutellas of the world. You know, we don't have any relationship, but just as an example, and put together kind of a preferred network of sponsors, partners, and tools that these players can use. So if they're in Georgia on a Korn Ferry event and they need, you know, to get to a gym, and we have a contract with a gym, you know, they can go in there and use that facility for free because they're a Commonwealth athlete. So that's one example. And then, you know, as our user base grows, you know, what we're thinking about is, you know, I refer to it as like a rising tide lifts all boats. So, you know, if we've got 10,000 users now, and in a year we have 50,000, 100,000 users, we're putting out content. You know, our first two players are about to go into a 2v2 match with two very well-known golf YouTube golfers. And so that's an opportunity for these two players to increase their profile, which should beget better sponsorship conversations and potentially sponsors exemptions because they get bigger profiles. So we're taking a pretty holistic view on the player. And it's a bit of a, you know, symbiotic relationship. As their profile grows, you know, the prospects of the player grows. Within golf, I mean, golf, you know, of all sports, I love horse racing. I've been a fan for almost 20 years since I lived in Baltimore and went to the Preakness, but golf is near and dear to my heart. And so for me and for our whole team, like if we can be a positive solution, you know, the game of golf right now is going through this like vacuum up at the top, you know, all of the economics are getting pulled up. And we can debate, you know, the merits of that, but it only exacerbates the challenges of the early stage player. And so us amongst our cohorts and a lot of other things that are happening, USGA just announced their development program. You know, if we can be one of the solutions that helps move the game of golf forward and makes it easier for these players to have their shot, like that would just mean the world to me personally. I mean, there'd be nothing cooler than having a big impact on golf. And then, you know, finally, you know, we are aiming to be what I call a diversified sports offering platform. We do have our eyes on other sports. We're thinking mostly about individual sports for the moment. You know, that's where these financial constraints are the highest. And so, you know, for our third sport, I think tennis probably jumps off the page to start. We have a lead investor that is a big Formula One guy. And so he's talking about creating a young driver program. I mean, that's way, you know, that's beyond a horizon that I can see right now. But I would say tennis, and, you know, the going back to our platform and our technology, everything's already built. So the time for your first sport, you know, that takes a lot of work. It took us almost 2 years in stealth to get horse racing off the ground. Now we're going from horse racing to golf in 12 to 18 months. You know, to go from golf to tennis will take 6 to 12 months. And each successive sport, it's just shorter and shorter because we've built and done all these things. And so I'm expecting to be in tennis, call it this time next year, maybe even a little sooner, you know, if golf really goes well. And, you know, my vision for Commonwealth is the 3 to 5 year plan is we're in 5, 7, 10 sports. And as an investor, as a customer of Commonwealth, you know, you're looking at all kinds of different sports, and, you know, you might have a player that's in a tennis tournament in your backyard. You know, you might have a player in a golf tournament, and a horse race. And so, you know, with Commonwealth, you can go all over the country and the world watching your athletes. And, you know, from there, it becomes a whole different thing. It's a networking thing. It's a community. There's just, we have friendships being made at these events. It's a really dynamic thing, and we're having a ton of fun while we're at all these events.
Sounds absolutely fascinating. I wish we could spend even more time talking about it, but I have a sense we may have opportunity to bring you back on a future episode of Drivers. Brian, thanks so much for sharing some of the vision with our listeners, and thank you all for listening. We appreciate it, and we'll see you again in the next episode of Drivers.